We move to the last case for today, Bridges v. Chambers.
May it please the court, my name is James Jacobs of the Cook County Public Defender's Office representing defendant appellant Darnell Bridges. The most disturbing thing about this case is the Illinois courts refused to consider any of the facts concerning the treatment of Darnell's parents or the circumstances of his arrest. Those facts were peculiarly outrageous and purposeful, and I'd like to go through them with the court's permission. Detective Turner was already in Linda Bridges' home when she arrived home at 6 o'clock. Detective Turner told her that her 17-year-old son, Darnell, had shot a police officer and demanded to know where he was. Well, Mom knew that Darnell was working at a Dominick's as a bagger, but she also knew that Darnell had never been in trouble with the law before, had never been arrested. So she did not want to tell Detective Turner where Darnell was, but instead instructed Detective Turner to follow Mom in Mom's car, follow Mom to the store. When they arrived at the Dominick's, Mom participated in the detective's first interaction with Darnell. All the detective asked Darnell in the store was what time he'd gotten to work. Mom volunteered to bring Darnell to the station herself, but Detective Turner assured her that this wasn't necessary, and if the police needed to contact Darnell, she would be contacted as well. Mom and the detective then left the store, and Darnell went back to work, only to be arrested 10 minutes later and brought to the station, where he was questioned by Detective Turner and asked to see his parents, a request that was refused because he was 17 years of age. It's about 8:30 at this point. Mom found out that Darnell had been arrested at midnight and immediately went to the station with her husband and Darnell's dad, Matthew Bridges. Turner told them that they would be allowed to see him because they saw Detective Turner and asked to see Darnell, but they were not allowed to see him. And they waited. After Darnell was held incommunicado and interrogated throughout the night, beginning at 8:30 in the evening and ending at close to 7 o'clock in the morning, he signed a statement, which was the only evidence that the state presented of his guilt. As I said, the Illinois courts refused to consider any of these factors. And the issue for this court on habeas review is whether the circumstances of Darnell's interrogation should have been reviewed under the principles of a juvenile confessions and juvenile interrogations, as established by the seminal United States Supreme Court cases of In re Galt, Gallegos versus Colorado, Fair versus Michael C., and Haley versus Ohio. So the issues for this court are two. First, is a 17-year-old a juvenile, and therefore did Illinois courts fail to properly apply the standards of juvenile confessions, specifically the treatment of the parents?
Do you agree if this young boy was 18 years and 2 days old that the voluntariness, admissibility of his statements would have been properly resolved by the state courts?
Well, actually, while the well-established standard is a totality of the circumstances,
right.
And I would submit that certainly the treatment of the parents and the exclusion...
Yeah, that's very questionable. I certainly don't have any quarrel with what you're saying about that, the parents coming to the Dominick's and then leaving, and another group of officers coming and arresting them right away. But assuming everything happened as it did, and he was 18 years old and a couple of days, mm-hmm. instead of here 17 years and a few days short of being 18, would the case have been correctly resolved? So are we only talking about this drawing a line at age 18?
I would submit that would be a weaker case, yes. But I would also submit that a totality of the circumstances test would require some consideration of that. The problem here is that there was no consideration, none, and hostility. Hostility to the notion that a 17-year-old could be anything other than an adult. During the trial, the trial attorney tried to refer to Darnell as a kid. He was cut off by the trial court and said, he is not a kid, he's an adult under the law. The Illinois appellate courts demonstrated similar hostility in not according any consideration whatsoever. It would be a weaker case, Your Honor, if he was 18. But I would still say that those factors should have been considered.
Do they all shake out then? And anytime you draw a line, it's arbitrary, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this A.M. Butler case a couple of years ago, where it was a 10-year-old boy. Obviously, a little kid like that, there's more concern about him being susceptible to agreeing with anything that the police might say and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But a 17-year-old and 17 years, 11 months, or however old mm-hmm. this young fellow was, what's the different analysis that you should make?
Well, the different analysis is a consideration of the juvenile totality of the circumstances test, which all 11 circuits and at least 45 out of 50 states apply to 17-year-olds. There has never been a federal district court case, which has failed to apply a juvenile totality of the circumstances test to a 17-year-old. And the issue, and that is the, while there's been no United States Supreme Court case to involving a 17-year-old in this context, under well-established habeas laws established in Williams versus Taylor, it isn't necessary to have an exact factual match. All that is required is that there be an unreasonable application. And I'll quote from Williams versus Taylor, what the problem in this case is that Illinois unreasonably refused to extend a well-settled legal principle to a new context where it should have applied.
When was his age disclosed to the officers?
Oh, yes. They were very...
When was it?
I do not know, but the officers were very aware of the age, which is, I would submit, why they proceeded in the way that they did. Darnell, when he first asked to talk to his parents at the police station, said, you can't because you're 17. And that is the culture in Illinois. That is the culture in Illinois courts. That's the culture in Illinois police stations, that 17, immediate adult, these factors are not considered at all. Just keep the parents out, lie to the parents about whether the son's even going to be arrested, and it's all going to be okay and blessed.
Well, you know, when you look at the Roper case, in
yes.
2005, the court uses the word juveniles to refer to 17-year-olds, but it really was an open question whether the Eighth Amendment prohibited execution of such juveniles, even though it had found in Thompson 20 years earlier that juveniles under 16 couldn't be educated. So my question is, before Roper, the court considered 17-year-olds juveniles, but not subject to the same protection as 16-year-olds. You would agree with that?
Yes, but they were still juveniles, though.
But doesn't it mean that at least as to 2005, we didn't have like a bright line rule for the age at which a person is juvenile? And, you know, whether or not there would be enhanced protections under the Constitution?
I would submit that you look to the other federal circuits and determine and see that no other federal circuit has ever interpreted Galt. Has never failed to apply Galt, Haley, and Gallegos to a 17-year-old. And that is one part of the 2254 E2 of an unreasonable application. Moving on to the fact that if Darnell was a juvenile, I don't think it presents a close question as to whether his confession should have been suppressed. This was his very first interaction with the criminal justice system. He'd never been arrested before. This was a wee hour interrogation. His parents told him they would be contacted. And the degree of purposefulness and outrageous conduct of isolating Darnell sets this case apart.
Thank you. Ms. Myers.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Leah Myers from the Illinois Attorney General's Office on behalf of Respondent Warden John Chambers. In this case, on direct appeal, the Illinois Appellate Court did conclude that petitioner's confession was voluntary. While petitioner focuses on the facts that preceded the interaction at the police station, it should be noted that the circumstances of the questioning itself were very benign. The first round of questioning occurred at 8:30 p.m. between Detectives Turner and Winstead and petitioner. Miranda warnings were given, and questioning only lasted 30 minutes. The second round of questioning occurred at 3:30 a.m., again between Detectives Winstead and Petitioner, as well as Assistant State's Attorney Kathleen Dillon. Again, Miranda warnings were given, and again, questioning lasted only 30 minutes. The final round of questioning occurred at 6:10 a.m., with ASA Dillon and Petitioner preparing a written version of his confession and reviewing it, and this entire process lasted a little over 1 hour. In between these questioning sessions, Petitioner was given bathroom access, he was given a beverage, and the Illinois trial court made an explicit factual finding that there were no coercive tactics by either the police or by ASA Dillon in the manner that the questioning was conducted.
So let's get to the question of him being a juvenile and
certainly.
Whether or not he's a juvenile. And when we look at the law, as counsel has argued in all the other circuits, a 17-year-old is a juvenile and so entitled to certain special protections. Why shouldn't we so find?
The Illinois Appellate Court made its decision in May 2003, and as Petitioner conceded, at that time there was no clearly established Supreme Court precedent defining juvenile in this area of the law. While Petitioner can point to many jurisdictions, it's also true that several jurisdictions defined juvenile as 18 under state law. However, there are also 10 states, including Illinois, that define juvenile as 17 or younger, as well as 2 states that define it as 16 or younger, which is evidence on the other side that the definition of juvenile was not resolved at the time of the appellate court's decision. And because we're here on habeas review, the only issue is whether there's clearly established Supreme Court precedent, which again Petitioner concedes there was none, defining juvenile as less than 18. Therefore, the appellate court reasonably concluded that Petitioner was not a juvenile. However, even if this court were to disagree and to draw the line at 18, even considering those additional factors relevant to a juvenile, the ultimate decision that the confession was voluntary is the appropriate decision. Here there are a few factors that potentially support a finding of involuntariness, but almost all of them are countered by other indications in the record. For example, it is true that Petitioner lacked any criminal justice experience at the time. However, this factor is counterbalanced by the fact that he was less than a month from turning 18. He had excellent attendance at school. He received average grades. He had plans to attend a trade school after graduation from high school. He came from a stable family home life and held a part-time job. These many indications of his background show an intelligence and maturity which counterbalance any concern potentially about his lack of criminal justice experience.
But then we have the big factor of his parents being there, asking to see him repeatedly there when the questioning was going forward.
Certainly. That is the most glaring factor to consider. However, it's also true that the record is not clear whether Petitioner was aware of what was going on outside of the interrogation room. And the central factor to be considered about voluntariness is whether that subjective individual's will was overborne, as stated in Schneckloth, the U.S. Supreme Court case, and where if Petitioner is not aware of the conduct involving his parents, certainly it would have no influence on his decision to make a statement. Furthermore,
so then you're saying that the police were under no obligation to tell him that his parents were out there?
That's true. In addition to the fact that under Illinois law, the Illinois Juvenile Court Act, again, the line is drawn at 17. So functioning as state as the police under Illinois law, in the absence of clearly established federal law establishing the line at 18, it was reasonable for them to follow Illinois law, which set the line at 17, whereas after you're 17, you would have no right to speak with your parents. And also, this court in Hardaway versus Young considered a case in which there was no friendly adult present at questioning. And in this case, this court acknowledged that the absence of a friendly adult itself cannot make a per se finding of involuntariness, that the absence of a friendly adult is only important in a marginal case. Given the fact that there's virtually no other indications in the record supporting involuntariness, this is certainly not a marginal case. While it is true that questioning occurred at a late night hour, other characteristics of the questioning do not raise any concern, because although Petitioner attempted to characterize this as questioning from 8:30 until 7 the next morning, really the totality of the questioning was only 2 hours, that there were rest periods in between.
And that right, but he was in custody from that period, from 8:30 p.m. to 6-something in the morning?
That's correct.
7-something in the morning?
That's correct. And actually, this case is very similar to this court's decision in Ruvalcaba versus Chandler, which was published in July 2005. In Ruvalcaba, that case involved questioning duration of approximately 2 hours, which was broken into three sessions, just like this case.
There's no way he could be charged as a juvenile. He had to be charged as an adult under Illinois.
That's correct. Under Illinois law, that is correct. And so the similarities, again, to Ruvalcaba are that the detention in Ruvalcaba was 14 hours as opposed to 12 hours. There was no friendly adult. There was beverage and bathroom access provided in Ruvalcaba. And the important difference between Ruvalcaba in this case is that Ruvalcaba was 16 years old, whereas petitioner here, again, was less than a month from turning 18. While the Illinois Appellate Court acknowledged that he was a juvenile in that case, the important thing to note is that this notion of special caution that is applied to juveniles, as this court has acknowledged in both Hardaway and Am versus Butler, is that age becomes more of a concern the younger an individual is. So certainly the Am case, which involved a 10-year-old, raises a much more significant concern about involuntariness than, say, a 17-year and 11-month-old petitioner. Therefore, even if this court were to apply any special caution, very little special caution would be required. And in addition, the Illinois Appellate Court expressly acknowledged that while it did not consider petitioner a juvenile, it did consider petitioner's age within the totality of the circumstances.
How many states did you say has 17 as the age of cutoff age?
10, including Illinois, and also two at 16.
The underlying incident here was shooting of an off-duty police officer who apparently got in the line of fire of one gang person trying to shoot somebody else. Were other people charged and convicted in connection with this?
I believe so. They were not charged. They were tried separately,
right.
And I believe co-defendants were prosecuted.
What were the names of those? And I don't know if the record tells us that. Are any reported cases involving the? Because this fellow was apparently a lookout, if anything.
I'm afraid I'm not sure about that, Your Honor. I know that I'm afraid I don't know, but the record here in this case doesn't reflect that, and
but
I don't otherwise.
There were at least a couple more people convicted out of the same incident,
yes,
you're saying?
Yes, that is correct. I do know that for sure.
Okay.
And just to emphasize again, the only potential factors here are the absence of a friendly adult, which in Hardaway this court acknowledged is only important in a marginal case. His questioning was only 2 hours long because he was allowed to rest in the meantime and was given bathroom and beverage. Because of the fact that the detention itself, as this court recognized in Ruvalcaba, that 14 hours is not one that raises concerns, respondent respectfully requests that, like Ruvalcaba, that this court affirm the district court which denied habeas relief, especially in light of the fact that because we are in habeas review, the only question is whether there is clearly established Supreme Court precedent that the appellate court opinion would be contrary to or an unreasonable application of, and given the deference on habeas, that affirmance of the district court is appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you. Much time. You have 1 minute, Mr. Speaker.
The only thing that I conceded is that Haley Galt and Michael Fair, Ben Fair versus Michael C. did not involve a 17-year-old. What the problem here is that it's not directly contrary to, but it's an unreasonable application of existing federal law. In answer to Justice Kaney's question about how many states have juveniles as being 17, a lot of states have juveniles as being 17, but even in those same states, they apply the juvenile totality of the circumstances of parental presence and conduct with respect to the parents. In Galt itself, it recognized that there were people, there were juveniles that would be prosecuted as adults, but they still need to consider the juvenile totality of the circumstances, even though they are 17. In Hardaway versus Young and Ruvalcaba case, the Illinois courts actually applied the correct standards. Here, that did not happen. And it wasn't just the exclusion of Mrs. Bridges and Mr. Bridges at the station, but the orchestration of the arrest to conceal the fact of the arrest. The cops knew that Linda Bridges was going to be trouble, so they concealed Darnell's arrest. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.